Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters Edition. I am your host, Chris Carlson, and my co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us shortly. And we are back to talk some Vikings stuff. No, there's no news. There is no news as far as Vikings oriented. There is a lot going on here in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul. The pandemic, and obviously now this protests, all sorts of stuff going on. So be as safe as possible out there. There's some stuff that people, you know, are fighting for. There's also stuff that you disagree with. There's justice to be had. There's a variety of stuff going on. So if you are out there protesting, be safe. Try to stay, in line, so to speak, but it is, it's tough. So we are back, as a distraction, like we said this whole time. We want to appreciate, send our thoughts and, just appreciation towards, folks that are listening in general, towards, the essential workers that went out there the last couple of months and had to work amongst the people, whether it's hospitals or stores or whatever. Like I said, we're just here for a distraction. Now there's another layer where it's even got us distracted. We are, our thoughts are with everybody tonight. Like I said, there's a lot going on in the city here locally. This is the fourth week in a row we've been doing rewinds, going over old rosters or, you know, just kind of sifting our way through some Vikings history. And now we are in the range of 2010 to 2019, that whole decade of roster. Basically, very similar format. Obviously, we peaked in 2017 with the Minneapolis Miracle. And then Philly kicked the snot out of us pretty much once they got the lead. And that went down. But we're just going to kind of bring you through some names, the dome collapsing year, which starts off right with 2010. Peterson getting suspended. Peterson setting a record. Well, basically the second best record, I should say, for a rusher. There's a lot that went into it. Teddy came in. Teddy came out. Lots of injuries. All sorts of stuff, right? So we're going to bring you through these 2010 rosters, basically. And then, like I said, peak at 2017. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters Edition, welcome. Appreciate you. It can be found right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives right there, but you don't have to just download it or listen to it in the browser on Blog Talk. We are across a lot of different platforms. This show can be heard under the Ropeadoperadio podcast at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn to find the platforms. Why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have and you're not quite happy, I got something for you. I use it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. That's live streaming cable. There's a 7-day free trial. Once you do start a plan, they start as low as $55 a month, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. They do have the cloud DVR. That's AT&T TV Now. Like I said, live streaming cable. However, if your internet is just rough, right? Maybe you live by an airport. Maybe you live out in the outskirts. I get it. I've had internet issues throughout my life on and on. I get it. It sucks. And it's not like you're just going on Netflix to archive something. If you can't do the AT&T TV Now, the live stream, there is AT&T TV. That's a normal cable platform. It is a growing platform. You can just Google it, put your area code in there. It's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Parts of New York, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, parts of California, all the way up to the Northwest in Seattle, other places like St. Louis in the Midwest. It's in a variety of places, still growing, like I mentioned. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, live streaming cable. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host. And you know, there's a lot going on in where you're at and where I'm at. Just in general, the Twin Cities, St. Paul and Minneapolis. And so we're trying to just distract, you know, some folks and get their mind off it for, you know, even a moment earlier. We planned on doing this at 7-ish. I had to go for a walk just to clear my mind over these last couple of days. But how is everything going on your side, ma'am?
Pretty good. So yeah, if you happen to hear the random siren or helicopter noise, I'm fine. Everything's good. I'm about 2 miles away from the action, so everything should be cool. But if you happen to hear that, that's what's going on. And other than that, man, it's been a busy week with all the things going on around here, and still got the pandemic, I guess we'll call it, going on. So things are piling up on each other. But other than that, let's get a little distraction. Talk some Vikings. We're starting at the 2010 season, I think.
We are. And that was Favre's last season, not just as a Viking, but in general. Although I'm sure he'll still have some, there'll still be some rumors like they have since then that he's going to come back, maybe just for a fourth quarter. He did start 13 games. And his starting streak, what do you know, as a Viking, came to a close because he got hit on a cold night. I think we were playing Philly. Cold night in Gopher, the Gopher Bank, the TCF Bank Stadium, because the Metrodome had collapsed from so much snow on top of it that they played in Detroit for that one game randomly, and then they played outdoors. But the field was so hard because they weren't ready. You know, the football season was done for the Gophers as far as, you know, home games. So they basically just got the snow off, tried to heat it up a little bit. There is coils now in there, but that wasn't the case prior. So he hit the ground, and he wasn't coming back from it, unfortunately. I mean, he's okay, but it is how ironic, Aaron, that this long-ass starting streak ends being a Minnesota Viking. Not that big of a surprise, is it?
No, I mean, not considering it's the Minnesota Vikings. And again, I think they had just opened up TCF Stadium as they're building the new stadium. Or have we gotten there yet? I'm not sure. But it's right around that time with Favre because, no, you're right. I remember it was the Metrodome. You're right. The roof caved in, and they had to play that weird game in Detroit. Home game played at Ford Field. And then they came back and played at TCF Bank Stadium. So, yeah, I mean, Favre was starting to have a decent season. And I found himself hurt in the end of the streak. How old was he at that point? 41, 42 years old?
41 years old. I'm looking at it right now, the roster. And by the way, for those at home listening, profootballreference.com is the website we use. And it's fun just to go through the years, whether it's your squad or the Viking squad or some other squad or whatever. It's really fun to go through this. But yeah, 41 years old. Are you hearing me okay on that end anyway? Can you hear me pretty good?
I am. I'm hearing you. I'm just wondering. I'm kind of distracted by all the noise going on around. Are you hearing any of that coming through?
Right. Yeah, yeah. You can hear me. Like, I'm not breaking up. Like, you can hear pretty much all I'm saying.
I can hear everything you're saying. You're crystal clear.
Okay, good. So, yeah, that was the year. And so that's how we started. It was a rough year just in general. Brad Childress got canned. He went 3-7. Leslie Frazier came up and had us playing 500 ball at 3-3. And Leslie Frazier, you know, I think, you know, he had shown to be a quality coach, assistant coach, a coordinator, defense coordinator. He had good pedigree. And it seemed like a good hire to hire him because we had seen the Tony Dungys, the Billicks, the Tomlin. We had seen these guys that, hey, why don't we just make that guy our coach? And not to say that he did a horrible job, because he didn't. A lot of it had to do with roster turnover, because it started turning over pretty majorly after that. But Frazier took over that next year. We drafted and unfortunately had to start, I think, like 10 games. Christian Ponder. And Ponder, you know, the Florida State-Miami rivalry that we have because the Gophers suck, so we needed like a second squad back in the day. We had this little rivalry, Miami-Florida State and all that, but Ponder, you kind of knew in a lot of the – first, he got hurt a lot of those years in that God, what was that backup quarterback who took over and did really well? He played for Buffalo, too. He – and this was at Florida State. He would either get hurt in most of the years, or he put up stats against bad teams and then in clutch moments, he didn't look as good, Ponder. And so I was not overly joyed with the draft pick, especially where he got drafted. And maybe some of that bias was because I had seen him, you know, a fair amount of times, and it's Florida State or whatever. But I was a little like, oh boy, here we go, whatever. But we were 3-13 that first year. McNabb was actually a guy that jumped in real quick, because remember McNabb at that point in his career, he was faded, but he kept putting balls in the dirt over and over and over again. And over the next couple of years, you could kind of see, you know, we had a similar roster that next year. It didn't feel like it should be that big of a drop-off. We did have some injuries, and obviously, like I said, to have a young quarterback who, you know, actually his first game was against the Packers. He looked good, and then it was pretty much mediocre after that. He could run pretty well. When you start to get to 2012, I do remember Jerome Felton, another fullback. And we talked about how a tight end, how we've had some of these fullbacks and tight ends. Tony Richardson comes to mind, too. I think that was on the last show. How it's like, oh, dude, we got this guy, and then he gets hurt or something. Or he'll be for a couple years, and we can't afford him because he's going to get paid someplace else. But I do remember Felton being one of those guys where you're like, all right, that's a pretty good lead blocker there. Jerome Simpson was a guy that came over and never quite worked out. Matt Khalil was a rookie. We got him 2012. That rookie year, I was really impressed. But you could start to see slowly but surely, we started to, our roster started to look different. But we did bounce back 2012, though, that 2012 year. And isn't that is the year that he rushed for 348 rushes for 2,097 yards. And at the end of that season, he did it against the Packers. They beat the Packers in a competitive game. And then you know how it works out sometimes. You got to face the Packers the very next game because it was the last game of the year. Ponder, I don't know if he would have won again, but Ponder got hurt. He messed up his elbow. And Joe Webb was under center, which that was never good because he was a wide receiver, really. 10-6 that year. But I do remember how much of a buzzkill it was, like, oh, he almost set the record. That was a great year. And then, oh, by the way, we kind of found out, oh, Ponder's hurt, dude. Oh, look at the picture of his elbow. Oh, wait, he's not starting. Oh, wait, we're going to lose this game.
Yeah, putting it back to when you're talking about getting Ponder originally, as a Florida State fan, I kept a pretty good track of him, and he wasn't that impressive at Florida State. So I was in the same boat that you were at. Kind of, okay, you know, you're going to pick him at 12. Some other quarterbacks on the thing. I don't know who else came out that year. I know there's like Jake Locker and stuff, but he had went before. So I think they kind of got left with Ponder. And like you said, he came out of the gate pretty well. I was pretty optimistic about him. But while we get to this season, and this is AP's big year, like you said, and, you know, he's just run over everybody. I think he had 2,000 yards. He was just rolling, and we get close to the playoffs. That last game, we got to beat the Packers, like you say. And then, you know, he gets hurt, and we end up with Joe Webb. And that was basically what I remember most about that season, is going to the playoff game with the Packers. I think we had to beat them to get into the playoffs just so we could play them again. And, Ponder, you could sort of see the writing on the wall. Then he made a few plays with his feet. But he had a problem with the out ball. He couldn't get enough zip on it, and you get picked off constantly. So they just stopped, closed off the whole sidelines for him, and it just wasn't going to work out at that point. Defenses could adjust to that pretty easily. And so you started to see, okay, well, Joe Webb wasn't much. They didn't use him a lot. I thought maybe they could have tried some other things with him, but they couldn't decide if he was a wide receiver or quarterback at that time. And right. You pretty much had everything in place. Defense was good enough. He had a playoff team. I mean, it was a pretty decent season. I was unfortunate that Ponder couldn't play in that playoff game.
Yeah, it definitely felt like they had some momentum going. And like you said, it was a good club, especially to come off a 3-13 year. That's pretty impressive. And 2010 was bad, too. So I was like, okay, dude, something's going on here. You know, there's some positivity going on. And Well, not so much. 5-10-1 in 2013, and some of these names I'm going to start mentioning starts popping up on our roster for good or for bad or for just, oh, I remember that guy. But 5-10-1, and I totally forgot when I did a little research for this show that it's two ties in the last, you know, chunk of years to Green Bay. Two ties against them. And I forgot we had tied them previously rather than a couple years back. That kind of threw me off. But a drafty Josh Robinson was in the house. Greg Jennings signed. Like, okay, that was when Jarius Wright started showing up a little bit. Captain Mutterling, Sendejo, Cordell Patterson. Ponder got hurt. We even went to Josh Freeman that year. I remember we had picked him up off waivers, I believe. Tony Gerhardt was another name. Tony Gerhardt. We had an AP, and we still picked him. And then a guy that we'll get to not all that long, Blair Walsh was also on the squad too, sir.
Yeah, so this was that transition period getting ready for Mike Zimmer. I think the end of Leslie Frazier's run. Bill Musgrave, his offensive coordinator, was not very imaginative with what he was trying to do. Of course, he was limited with having Ponder for whatever time he was in there. And you do bring up Josh Freeman, who I was big on when he was at Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And then he came here as semi-excited until I saw that press conference with, I still don't know to this day why Spielman had to whisper answers into his ear. That just was the oddest thing I had ever seen. And he played terribly when he got in. He missed everybody. Now, in his credit, he hadn't thrown a ball in a game for a while, but still, he was just overthrowing, underthrowing everything. Worse than McNabb, which you brought up earlier, who just couldn't seem to get the ball out of the dirt. And then, yeah, what sticks out to me mostly about this 2013 season is the defense was pretty good. Like you said, Josh Robinson was small. Chris Cook, who ended up having not so good things happen to him later on, was a rookie also, or a second-year player who was a pretty good corner. Jamarcus Sanford was on that squad. But the offensive line that would begin to sort of kind of the end of the end with that before we started getting to flux with the offensive line, you had Matt Khalil, Charlie Johnson, still had Sully at center, and Brandon Fusco, and you still had Phil Loadholt, which the end of Phil Loadholt turned to be kind of the end of our offensive line, and we're still trying to fix it there. Matt Khalil was solid then, I think, still at that point. He hadn't quite declined that much. And then you had Greg Jennings, who got sick Aaron Rodgers and came over here. So, yeah, you can see Kyle Rudolph only had 8 catches that year, it seems, so he was a young player. But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a very impressive team. Just I think it had more to do with the coaching and maybe just the attitude of the team at all, because it essentially had the same team as the year before, but wasn't even close to a playoff team.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the quarterback issue hurt. And like you said, I was high on Freeman too. I'm right there with you. When we got him, I was like, sweet. Now I didn't think much of him that year, just trying to get in the playbook. And I think the fact that we got him and had to play him somewhat quickly, that hurt him too. I do vaguely remember that press conference you're talking about, but he did show some potential, no doubt, at Tampa, and I thought, hey, man, I'll give it a try, you know, that, okay, let's see what this does. Did improve the record a little bit, 7-9 in 2014. Matt Castle was a guy that we're going to be like, all right, man, you know, you saw what he did when Brady went out with that ACL. He got him to the playoffs. He's a solid dude. We're going to be okay. And then the first 3 games, he's already hurt. So, once again, we got Teddy, but we wanted to develop Teddy. But we had to throw him right in. And he actually played pretty well. That was a year AP got suspended, too, for whipping his kid. And Asante and what's the scat pack? Why am I missing his name? The guy that went to the Raiders.
You're talking about Asiata?
Nah, that's the we started him, but the other guy, dang it, it'll come. Shoot.
I'm drawing a blank too, but I'll look at it. You can keep going.
Maybe McKinnon wasn't there yet. That's who I was thinking about. But yeah, that's who I was thinking about. Sharif Floyd was a guy that we added as well, in that 2014 where you're like, oh, this Floyd's going to be something. And, man, when you look at what happened to him, you know, that sucked too. For you know, the surgery he had and it went wrong and the healing process, and he ended up, you know, getting a lawsuit out of that and stuff like that. That whole thing just sucks, man. That really sucks. But man, you can really start to see, you know, the Harrison Smiths in his second year. Xavier Rhodes had a start. Anthony Barr was a rookie. You could really, Everson Griffin started taking over in 2014, of course, was Mike Zimmerman. Griff, you know, had come off the bench and put up good numbers, sometimes on the end, sometimes, you know, one of the tackle spots on third down. And I remember Jared Allen was just getting to that point where he's getting a little faded, a little older, and it was kind of like, some people were in between on the deal we gave Griff just because he hadn't been a starter. But when you look at, you know, what was going on, you had Robinson already. That was nice. You had Lindell Joseph as well, which was key. And that was a great signing because he was a free agent, Griff. And that really paid off in general. He got 12 sacks that first year. And you could really, like I said, when you look at that roster – Joe Berger, man, we could use Joe Berger next year at right guard, dude. My goodness, or left guard, I should say. That's a really solid dude. By that time, Khalil was starting to fall apart. Like you said, Phil Lowell, solid dude from Oklahoma, kind of fell off. I remember we closed that year pretty well down the stretch. There was an overtime game that we won. In fact, I think it was that little wide receiver. Got all those first down, Jarius Wright. He was really good on third down. But then so Teddy got in there. We got a little feeling going. We got, obviously, Peterson back. And that 2015 year, our defense overnight almost was better the very next year. You know, obviously, Zimmer improving that defense. You look ever since that 2014 year. It's gotten better, but that year I really felt good about our club, man. You had Diggs in a rookie year. You had Thielen starting to get more playing time as a wide receiver. Like I mentioned, Sharif, Terrence Newman. I mean, you really started to see it. TJ Clemmings, I'll leave that alone. And I like what you said. This is also the year that our line could run block, but, man, they couldn't pass block. And the very next year it got even worse, but with a second-year quarterback who had finally gotten the full starting year and all that, 11-5, Aaron, and they beat the Packers in Lambeau Field to win the division. Obviously, we know how that went, the 10-9 loss because of 28-yard miss by Blair Welsh. Welsh? He Welshed us. Mike Wallace, too. I forgot about Mike Welsh. Rhett Ellison, that was another tight end that we really thought, all right, this is a good little 1-2 punch with him and Rudolph. But that year, 2015, I was pretty high because on the squad and Zimmer and just everything. And it really looked like Teddy had, although he needed to improve, a lot of it had to do with he didn't have a lot of time. And he just made these little plays. The defense played better. It just was on the up and up. And like I said, on the road to get that W, I felt pretty good about that squad midway through this decade.
Yeah, this is when Zimmer's defense starts to round itself into shape. You got B-Rob and Griff at your ends. And then you got, you know, the linebackers, which we still have now, and they're young. They were young at the time with Greenway leading the way. You had Kendricks and Barr finally together. And that was the basis of what we see now. Xavier Rhodes was there, probably a boxing glove year for him. And then Harrison Smith was there. Sendale, Rhodes are familiar names that are still kind of bandied about. Terrence Newman came in to stop the gap at corner. Sharif Floyd was promising as a defensive tackle then. It didn't work out for him. And then Linval they brought in. He subsequently got shot. And then he, played really well for us and did what he had to do, kind of anchored that defense. And then you're starting to see Zimmer's imprint in there. You're right about the offensive line. It was just big decline. Loadholt's gone. You try to fill it with Clemmings. Got something named Mike Harris. Brandon Fusco's still there. He played well for us in Berger. But Khalil was kind of not playing well. And this was like only his third or fourth season, which was kind of misleading because he thought that you picked him, four or five in the draft. He had a decent rookie year. He thought he could, and it just only up from there. Turned out, no, that wasn't the case. Teddy was progressing, although he still, you know, Teddy can't throw the deep ball. That's when this started. But Teddy was young at that point in time. And, you know, he a lot of checkdowns, a lot of just move the ball. North Turner was the offensive coordinator, so there goes the imagination. But you still had Cordarrelle Patterson. You had some weapons to use. And that's when you – I know McKinnon was there the year before, but they really utilized him more.
Yeah.
And you got Diggsy. Diggsy kind of made his way in kind of third game of that season against Denver, I think, is when you really start to notice Diggs wasn't just a fourth-round rookie. Actually had a lot of talent and a lot of swag, and you just start to see what would become Stephon Diggs come out that season. And, you know, I didn't know much about him at Maryland because he was hurt at Maryland, and it really surprised me when he finally got on the field. I was like, this guy should be playing every down, but he wasn't quite there yet. And the coaches knew a little better than we did and kind of eased him into it. But yeah, he sure made an impact then.
Yeah. And if you look at him coming out of high school, it's one of the, not just wide receiver, but one of the best players coming out of high school into college too. But then he had like a spleen issue. You know, his freaking injuries were just like damn near life-threatening injuries too every year. Like, they were serious injuries, like 6-9 months, you're done, you know. Like, so that really did hurt his draft stock. And I remember Thielen getting those end-arounds, getting a couple of passes on third down. He, like I said, besides special teams, he did start to pick up. And then, and I'm so happy to see Teddy back, but man, in practice, grown men who are pretty tough dudes on the field, puking, crying, seeing Teddy just go back and do something he did thousands of times, just a little drop back, turned his knee, his ankle, just tore his whole leg up, unfortunately, in preseason. You could really see Teddy was a leader. Everybody loved him in the locker room. You could see some improvement. You could see him put on some strength. It really was like, here we – and then it happened. We had to get Bradford. And, no, you know, we were 8-8 that year. It's not like we were bad or anything like that, but we, our offensive line, we basically had to do the dick and dump, like you mentioned, even more that next year. I think we set a record from the merger, starting the most tackles. I think it was six or seven different tackles outside that we had to go. McKinnon did have a good year that year. I like, you're right about, how we started using them, and I really liked him. But then you had, you know, guys off the dudes that hadn't played well in a couple of years coming off the couch. You already had TJ Clemens starting to try to get in, actually, at not just as a rookie, but in there, 14 starts. Alex Boone was not the guy he had been. He didn't really even last year that long. But that was one of the worst off of those back-to-back years offensive line. It was almost sad to watch. It was like, oh, dude. And it was a rough one for that to go down the way it did and for Teddy to have that kind of serious injury, man.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I mean, like you said, he had probably done it a million times, and to have it be such a serious injury was the real shocker. I mean, yeah, you pull a hamstring or you do something like that, but to have a season-ending injury, possibly career-ending injury, in training camp, it really threw everybody off. And you know, you're right about the offensive line, and this is really making me think about when did it happen? I think this is the season, Chris, with Clemmings, Searles, Fusco, Berger, and Boone, who was an ill-fated free agent signee. A lot of mouth, no action on that guy. And we turned out to be a terrible offensive line, but it didn't come right away. It came like the fifth game of the season or something like that, where they played pretty well for five games. And then we played the Bears.
Piled up.
Yeah, we played the Bears on a Monday night. They exposed it, and the rest of that season was just sack after sack. But then, you know, they did trade a first-round pick to pick up Sam Bradford, who I still think is probably one of the best passers that I've ever seen. Unfortunately, he couldn't keep a leg on him. I mean, his knee was messed up his rookie year or something. It was just bone on bone is what I heard, and it was just not good. But as far as quality of just being able to put the ball where you wanted, that guy was good, and he made an awful lot of money off that arm, and was pretty good for us. I mean, that season, as good as he could have been with all the pressure he was under.
Yeah, and the system fit him pretty well, and he definitely was all gung-ho, and he'd had his best season in quite some time, maybe his best season in general. You're right, because he got in as a rookie the year after Cam got half the money he did as a rookie when they changed the rookie structure. So at least he got his money, that's for sure, even in that first deal. But, yeah, that was one of those, like I said, I think it was six or seven different tackles we had to start that year. And literally, I can't remember the year, but I believe it's the most post-merger amount of tackles started in that shit. So that kind of tells you right there. So, yeah, back-to-back years. They just weren't that good at pass protection in 2015, but in 2016, they weren't good at either, and the injuries piled up. Then we had we said, all right, well, we need to address the line. What are we going to do? We're going to get Mike Remmers and Riley Reiff on that line. And I'll tell you what, it actually did improve it to an extent. We had Pat Elflein that came in for 14 starts, it's looking like right here. Still had Berger. And Easton, man, Easton was just starting to get good. Then he had that major back issue, and he still hasn't even played good football yet. I don't even know if he's on a roster anymore. But I remember being really high on that. And that year, once again, we didn't protect, like, great, but we started to be able to run the ball in that year. Murray we brought in. Treadwell was the guy that we brought in. Trey Wayne's got his first starts. I think he was a second-year guy. We had Newman still back. Sandejo really got in there as far as starting to make plays. And obviously, you know, 13-3, and the way it started, it was like Bradford's hurt. Oh, shit. Well, we did get Case Keenum on the low, you know, one-year low. And so we're like, okay, we did go out there and address our line, and one of them turned out to be pretty good. Obviously, we know that year and the next year, what Mike Zimmer's, Remmers started to not look that good. We had to cut him. And maybe that's why they were afraid in these last couple of years to go out and, you know, give a big deal and cut somebody, because they're like, shit, what if it doesn't work? Then we're stuck with another contract. We had a, you know, cut in 2 years. Like you mentioned, that Boone was like a revolving door. It was just a rough one. But in all that, to start 2-2, much like last year, how we started kind of mediocre and they went on a run, but 2-2 to end up 13-3, that was something before we even get to the Philly stuff. I mean, that was something. We just kind of made it work. Were we great on offense? No. But we just made it work. We were second attempts in running. We did get up to 10th in scoring that year, which was a better improvement than the year before. And Hunter also started coming up, started all those games. And Kendricks was solidifying himself. It's really crazy that we are 13-3 after a 2-2 start, man.
Yeah, as you all know from listening, I'm a defensive football guy. I love defense, and this was the year, man. I mean, this defense was lights out this season. All over the NFL nationally, great numbers, putting in work. These guys were Hunter, Johnson, Joseph, Griffin. Linebackers were solid. Secondary was solid. Scheme was great, and that really propelled the team through that season, winning games with 21 points. You know, he figured if you could keep a team under 21, you're going to win that game, and it held true. Keenum was a great surprise. His mobility really helped because that line hadn't gotten much better with Reiff and Remmers playing the tackle. That was the Mike Remmers tackle experiment before we moved him to guard the next season. And Pat Elflein was a rookie and played well at center. They didn't like him there. Easton, like you said, was coming on, and Berger was coming on. So we thought we had the future guards that we needed at the time. Didn't work out with either of them at the time, but Berger was older, but still, you know, like quality and could probably hold down the spot for a couple of years. And then he had, like, you know, like I said, that was the defensive season. I mean, all was on the defense, and they played really well, and still they played to the level that we're still expecting this defense to play, probably unfairly, but it was lightning in a bottle perhaps. And like I said, Treadwell actually got some time. He was young, but we thought he had promise. But yeah, that was the year where we start to see Diggs and Thielen. That was the duo at wide receiver. And we had receivers back again. Vikings always have wide receivers. And we had them, and they started to show up. And then Murray was the power back, and McKinnon was the little back. Yeah. And everything just kind of clicked there. And you know, I think a lot of that had to do with Case Keenum looking back offensively. Maybe his attitude and the way he played. And coming out of Houston, where he just chucked the ball, man, that guy could throw. And he found a way to get it done time and time again that season.
Yeah, and like I said, they didn't protect great, but man, when you're second in the league in attempts and you got that, like you said, that type of defense, you can stay in some games. You know, sure, there are times where he'd do the little duck around, throw it up, and thank God Diggs and Thielen, you know, brought it down. But like you said, it was just that surprise. It was kind of like, okay, we'll just use him here. We'll just get by there. And eight in a row after I remember that. In fact, I believe Keenum actually kind of straightened out after that a little bit. That game was rough. 14-7, I believe it was. Or it was something like that to Detroit that lost. And it was like, man, we didn't even muster up anything. And then, like I said, we went on an eight-game winning streak, lost to Carolina in a good game, 31-24, and won out the rest of the way. And then, of course, as we know, the Saints game. The Saints game at home on a bye, one step away from the conference final. And, you know, we were in control of that game fairly, you know, fairly well. And they kind of got back into it. It started looking like that living in Loserville stuff. And you're like, here we go, dude. Yeah, we're going to lose this game. And, I mean, dude, the Minnesota miracle that it happened in the playoffs to the Vikes, finally something like that happens. It was just phenomenal. I called some people I hadn't talked to in a while. They called me I hadn't talked in a while. I was talking to my dad about it. Like, I mean, I remember that night. Oh, after Diggs made that play and just the celebration of Diggs throwing his helmet, all these people, you know, moshing on him. And the one of the best, I mean, it was a great night, right, for that. But I stayed up so late watching YouTube reaction from Vikings fans. And it was every once in a while I'll go do that it just to see a couple of the videos, a mom and a dad hugging, a sister and a brother, a son and a father obviously hugging, screaming. It was so fun that week after it. And like I said, I stayed up so late that night watching those YouTube videos, man.
Well, I got home late from work. Actually got off early, but I got home a little bit late. I ran into something on the way home, so I didn't get to see much of the first half, but it seemed like we were in control for that whole first half. And so you're thinking, okay, well, they played better than I thought they would have. This is going to be good. Started watching the second half, and like you said, it started to slip away and comes living in Loserville, and you're thinking, not again, man. And it just got down to the point where you're like, well, you know, I guess that figures. And then, you know, it happened. And you're like, okay. And I'm checking the sidelines. I'm looking all over for a flag. I mean, Loserville's hitting me hard at that moment. I'm thinking, okay, it's got to be something. There's going to be something. There's a flag down. Maybe he stepped out. Something happened. What is it? Just, you know, it didn't sink in for about 5 to 10 seconds. I'm like, okay, no flags, no nothing. Okay, yeah. And then I was like, this is unbelievable. And it was. I mean, because coming from us as Viking fans, it so often goes the other way, and you're just like, well, you know. And Millie, remember Millie, the old lady who sat by Goodell in that one? I swear she probably said something
That's
to that guy,
right.
but
yeah, I do remember that.
But yeah, and it just seems so improbable because your defensive back's going to miss a tackle like that, and Diggs, you know, did the un-Viking thing and took it to the end zone instead of getting out of bounds, and that never happens, you know, and people were like probably screaming at their TV, get out of bounds, because we're so conditioned to see that. And I think that's what you saw in those reaction videos, which were amazing. You could see so many years of Viking frustration come out of these people, and it was so good to see. Want to see that again soon. But yeah, I mean, it was probably one of the greatest Viking moments that I can remember. Well, I got to say, probably the best one, but I hate to say that because, you know, this might be more to come.
Yeah, and we did get a nice little taste last year in the playoffs, by the way, against the same squad at the buzzer, won the game. That was a good feeling too. But yeah, it's just the way it went down, like you said, literally everybody in the state was like, get out of bounds. Okay, he's on the ground. Fucking right. It's like, yeah, you're right, dude. Everybody had the same exact thing in those videos. Get out. Oh, my God. He kind of get out of it. Okay, just run. You know, like, oh, my God. I remember that it was at the University of Florida. I wasn't there, but these these roommates were there, and one of their roommates was from Minnesota. And this guy's running up and down the apartment hallway, and he's like, yeah, my roommate's from Minnesota. You know, like, it was just so funny. Like you said, just to see that pouring out. And although we did get a nice glimpse of that last year, that feeling of, like, a clutch moment. And in the playoffs at the end of a game, you know, we can go and blow somebody out. Or we mentioned in the 80s where we, you know, upset the Skins. Or not the Skins, unfortunately we did, but the Niners. We've done some stuff like that. You know, just ransacked the Cowboys on, you know. We were good at blowing people up. But when that tight game in the clutch, man, we know how that goes. So that was fun. Now, obviously, it was fun. A couple of minutes, we had a nice drive. A couple of minutes into that conference final. Obviously, the Super Bowl that year, 2018, was in Minneapolis. 25-yard touchdown pass from Rudolph. We're up 7-0. We got the ball back, and then there was a pick six, and we just never really did. Well, we didn't do anything. We literally scored that first opening drive and nothing after, 38-7. And, well, you know, it was that's why we call it living in Loserville, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was disheartening because we really thought that this was a squad that was going to do it, and it would have been amazing to have a Super Bowl at home, first one ever. And he started off so well, Rudolph, with a catch in the end zone. We're up 7, everything's good, and then the wheels come off, and Philly figured something out. And then he had to deal with the Philly fans who were not treating our fans very well, which is what Philadelphia does. And, yeah, it was not a good day for Viking Nation. But at the same time, I mean, you'd gotten to the conference final. And that's a familiar place for us. We seem to get there once a decade. And, you know, the same thing happened. And so, you said last year, Chris, it really pointed out to me after the Gophers had won against Penn State that it's just hard to come back that next week. And I kind of had a disagreement with you about it. But it does seem to be the pattern that's kind of hard to come off a win like that and then turn around. And as you saw what happened to the Gophers, they went down to Iowa and lost. And we went into Philadelphia and lost in this game. And I think there's something to that theory. I don't know if it's always that way, but I definitely think that it has a big impact, especially when you win it in that way, something surprising, something exciting like that, you know, a lot of adrenaline and coming down off a high. I really think there's something to that. And I think that's probably what happened is you would have liked to see them, you know, go into Philadelphia and play their best, but I just don't think they did that day.
Yeah, you're right. And that's a great point. Like you just – The emotion that was spent, you know, in that locker room, on that field, everybody, I mean, people stayed at the stadium for like hours after it. I remember those videos too. Those are great. In that one video that it says, hey, turn your volume down because it's going to show you the real noise. That shit was nuts when he caught that ball, how loud that was. I do remember that specific video, and I remember seeing people on the internet showing them listening to that in their ears. They just had to toss like, oh my God, that was so loud, because they didn't pay attention to what the thing clearly said before you hit play. But yeah, I mean, and the reason why, sure, was it like some miraculous thing that the Gophers did as far as one play in that game? No, but the fact that we had, you know, gotten on that rank versus ranked high rank and then gotten over the hump of something like that. And yeah, you're right. It's just one of those things, especially when you haven't been there and done that. It's hard. You know, you're going to have some programs that can do that. It just, man, it's a tough one, especially when you're going on the road at freaking Iowa and whatnot. But hey, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, that was a fun year, great year. And like we've done with all these, they end in a tough one. No doubt about it. Now, obviously, we actually started our show the next 2 years after, as you know. And so we're not going to go break down those seasons in detail as much. And we didn't get to the conference final. This is kind of our peak. But it was kind of like, okay, very mediocre on line play the next year. Then last year, we were able to get the run back going. And we're going to see. I think we'll still be able to run the ball. But can we make, like we said, those improvements on the line within who we have on the line? We do have some young players that can take a jump, and hopefully we can still maintain the level of running, if not a little bit better against the top lines, and then the rest can really fall into place. But, you know, like you said, dude, let's hope we don't have to wait till, you know, another 8 or 9 years to get to the end of the decade, right?
Right. And like you said, we're not going to go over last two seasons, but he had a decent season last year and, you know, a disappointing loss in San Francisco. And you want to say that that's a building block, but we don't know. This is going to be a very strange season coming up, and we're not sure exactly how that's all going to play out. And I think, you know, without fans, it's either going to be really good or really bad. It's going to be really hard to be, you know, middle of the road. It's certainly not going to be the same. And we don't know if training camp's going to start on time. All word right now is that it is, but we don't, you know, with the way things are going, it's hard to tell. But yeah, I mean, let's hope that the future is bright. Let's get the line fixed. I think that's something we want to do. And defensively, seems like we've made some additions that might help. But, you know, we'll see when the time comes just where we stand.
That is the biggest thing, man, that defense. I'm okay with the line, but, man, as we've talked many a times in the last couple of months, those cornerbacks are going to be tested. Luckily, we got two good safeties, so hopefully they can't hit home runs on us. But, man, they might just double and single the shit out of us this year. Let's hope not. But it can't get that much worse cornerback-wise if you look at all the analytics and what we saw right in front of our face. So you got to keep that in mind, people out there. Yes, there are new corners, but remember how many times week after week did Aaron and I say the guy, whoever it was, of course, Rhodes, because he was an all-pro, got most of the heat. But whoever it was, they were right. A lot of times, they were right there. They just didn't make the play. And that has to be just have Zimmer buzzing like, dude, I put you in the spot. I told you what was up. Put your hand up at the right time, or I'll put some boxing gloves on you. So it's not going to be as bad as people think. But it's easy. I understand, because you lose, you know, your four most productive corners. Holy shit, you know. But it is what it is. Any last words before we get out of here, sir?
No. Follow us on Instagram at living.in.loserville.podcast. Gotten a little more action on it, but I'd still like to see a little bit more. If you guys could go ahead and follow, that'd be great.
All righty. We're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week. We are going to, I mean, you know, like we said this last month, if there's some free agent news, we get a guard, we get a vet corner, we'll be here next week. But more than likely, we're going to shut this Vikings deal down, and we're going to deliver the show we've been talking about for you guys for a couple times now. The season of, it's living in Loserville. We do football and basketball. So the season that never happened. The Gophers run, the Minnesota Gophers basketball run, 1996-97. The co-host here, Aaron, and I, we actually have a personal life experience through that whole season. We moved out of the state to California together. So we're going to dip our feet into that next week. Like I said, that didn't happen, but we all know it happened. Thanks, Courtney James, and thanks, Bobby Jackson. Just kidding. The whole system was messed up. Anyway, we'll be back next week. Be as safe as you can. You know, just try to stay safe. I don't want to get into too much details. We're out of here. We'll be back next week. Peace.